Hi there, members of the club, and welcome to this Wednesday live session. Let's get stuck straight into it. I'll share my screen. Here we go. And we'll jump over to the club Trello board. And in today's live session, the things that we're going to be covering today are sitting in the agenda here. So first of all, we're going to look at the daily focus. And the daily focus, I'm going to drag down to the bottom because it is going to be working from one of our other major topics today. So I've just dragged that down. The second thing, or now the first thing that we're going to be covering, is that Melbourne practices are continuing to function in level 3. So the rest of the country, I think, are pretty A-OK on level 2 or more lenient than that. But we had bad news from the Premier on Sunday saying that the lockdown is going to be happening for a lot longer. So we're all going a little bit stir crazy down here, and it's dominated all of our topics of conversation as well. But with dental surgeries, I received a message from one of our wonderful members earlier, just with a fingers crossed, possibly the ADA seemed to be pushing like crazy to get Melbourne back to level 2. So let's hope that by Friday's email that comes out to notify everyone what to do, that that is good news that dental surgeries can go back to level 2. I've got really big fingers crossed for here, because there is an impact going far beyond that for other areas which are not in level 3. JobKeeper has we're going to the second tier, or the second level of the JobKeeper, which is a reduction in income from the government for workers who are currently just surviving on JobKeeper because of the fact they're not employed full time, because their practices have had to function just at an emergency level, level 3 at the moment. And so that next step, so already if they're just earning JobKeeper, they've already had a drop in income. Mind you, their mortgages have probably remained the same, and their rent has probably remained relatively the same. Now, even though that renters out there can't be evicted until January, that rent bill continues to mount up, and that's a lot of stress and worry for people. On top of that, they've got all the other expenses that go on with life. And with us functioning in level 3 for a prolonged period of time during this second phase of JobKeeper, that means that a lot of workers in the dental industry are going to be surviving on fewer dollars coming in every week or every fortnight, month, however, I think it gets paid every month. But I think the workers themselves still get paid their weekly, fortnightly payments. So fingers crossed that practices in Melbourne can go back to level 2. So our workers can go back to a full-time working week with all of the procedures that we've got in place that have assured us that we haven't had any cross-infection in terms of COVID situations in Melbourne within dental surgeries. I'm sure it's the same throughout the rest of the country as well. And that way, the workers within our organisations can continue achieving their full-time wage, therefore maintaining their standard of living during these more difficult and stressful times. Who needs the extra stress around a few extra $100 less every month coming in through the bank balance? So I am thinking of you all. If I can help out in any way, please let me know. But let's keep those fingers crossed around the country that Melbourne's going to level 2 soon. In line with that, I have had a few questions around the JobKeeper, and I have attached, so I'm just going to tick that one off. I haven't quite ticked that one off yet. I have attached a video here about the JobKeeper payments. This was put out by an accounting firm.
Yeah, no, you don't actually have to work to get the payment, but need to be actively engaged in the business.
And it just goes through, it's a reminder and explainer around the JobKeeper situation, because this next, because we've gone on for such a long period of time and this next level is a drop down in income, there have been questions around, what if I take some of my annual leave as well and top up my JobKeeper with an annual leave payment? Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. The annual leave gets treated first and then the JobKeeper is the top up. And so you get less of the JobKeeper attributed to your wage. And so my sister, the glorious Jenny, is a bookkeeper, and I've asked her if she can put together a very short video. I'm hoping to do that in the next couple of days. It explains that aspect of JobKeeper for your employees that maybe ask some questions, how on earth can I boost up my income with the entitlements that I've already achieved and earned and try to get more money coming in? And unfortunately, it's not that simple. So hopefully I've got a video coming out to you all in a special separate email in regards to that. So thanks, Jen. Hopefully she will be very happy to help us out. She's so shy. The other thing I wanted to mention just around Melbourne still functioning at level three, this is when I was thinking, and you know, it may still be the case, that the level three is going to be extended out through to at the very least October. And my thought is it's worthwhile doing, if you haven't already done so, get some figures of what your expenses are during level three production in order to remain viable as a business. If the figures make sense, then do everything you can to be a very productive emergency clinic. Patients certainly need the care. They can't be abandoned in any sort of oral health crisis at the moment. Life's hard enough as it is. We don't need to be neglecting our patients on top of that. And so I do suggest you do the figures and say, okay, well, if it makes sense, if we can cover our costs at the moment, even though it's a reduced income, by opening up as many hours as we can for it to see emergency patients, get somebody full-time on the reception desk, make sure that every phone call is being answered and patients are either being booked in or given advice on how to care for themselves until they can be booked in. On top of that, the other element to make sure that you're doing is to do everything you can to make sure that your team are putting in systems in place, understanding the current systems, really educating themselves up. So when you can start back, it's bang straight away. And you know, the promotions that you can do on Facebook, et cetera, to make sure that people are coming into the practice the minute they can is a great idea. So that is my advice to you. I'm going to share my screen again. I thought I had another thing to mention about that. I'm sure it'll occur to me later. I'll mention it to you if it does. The other thing I want to talk about is the changes to the club membership. Now, as you know, the club membership has been available for free since April, and it was really started off as a free service. It was never going to end up being a product, but because of the popularity, we've now got 59 practices involved, then it made sense just to continue it on as a product and service. I never wanted to be charging for this too early on. But considering the rest of Australia are functioning at level two or more lenient levels than that, and it is just Melbourne that are functioning at level three, and hopefully that won't be for too much longer, I will explain to you now how everything's going to change. Not everything, but the membership side of things is going to change as of the 1st of October. But please don't distress. If you have got reduced capacity in any way in your practice and you still want to be a member of the club, you can absolutely do that. I've got a discount code for you to use in those cases. So let me go to the club membership screen. This is this one here. So this, we've got the free membership as it stands at the moment. When you apply for the free membership, you didn't need to supply any credit card details. Now that I'm going to be charging a smaller fee for just to be a participant in the live sessions, and there's going to be a high, that the $497 fee is going to be for the full club membership. So I've introduced the $49 a month fee because I think that's going to be a fair method of making sure you still get to enjoy and benefit from all of the live sessions and the information that I deliver, but it's for a much reduced fee. And then the full club membership can have, and it now has a couple of additional elements to it to make it even richer experience for you in your practice. And so because you never had to register your credit card details in the past, we are going to need you to re-register yourself if you wanted to maintain your membership, because this time with a fee on top, we do need your credit card details. And this is all of this as of the 1st of October, so you don't have to do anything throughout September. I'll be sending emails directly to each and every one of you explaining the steps further detail. So the club basic is $49 a month. You get all the weekly live sessions, full access to the library of previous session recordings, That is the Club Hub page, members only page within the website. And as you scroll down, you can see all of those live session recordings here that you just scroll through. You've got the main topics that were covered in those live sessions, so it's easy to navigate and find the information that you need or scan for information that you think will be relevant to your practice. We've got all the recordings of the doing sessions here. And we also have the Charles Coves presentations and the special guest appearances. And so at the moment, we've had two special guests, Andy Lee from Health Practice Digital, and more recently, Les and Jonathan from My Smile Sim, the application that is going to be very useful at the moment. And I've just remembered what I was going to mention before, and I'm making a note for myself. I knew it would come back to me. It's the way the brain works. And all of the downloads that I mentioned throughout the live sessions are all listed there as well. You just easily just to scroll through and find what you need. So that, of course, is available to all club, basic club members, membership and the club membership. Also, inclusion to the club private Facebook group as well. So do jump on board, participate, let me know what future topics you'd like to have covered. Let everybody else know what's going on in your practice, share resources, advice, ideas, and then we can all be more successful together and support each other in that. So that's just $49 a month. So I have priced it in a way that it's, I tried to price it in a way that it was extremely easy to remain a member and continually get this kind of information to your team. The level up is the club membership. So this is the full club membership. That's $497 a month. You get the weekly live sessions, as mentioned before. You also get full access to the library of previous live session recordings that I showed you just before as well. Again, inclusion to the club private Facebook group, which somehow I've spelled wrong. So I've got to make sure I correct that the minute I get offline today. Enrollment in the JPPS online mini courses. And so all the mini courses are available in the full club membership. So your team members have consistent and constant access to those. And the monthly these are two additional things that we're going to offer. So every month you've got the option of requesting a private online session with myself of up to an hour, and also a private online session with Charles of up to an hour as well. This is where we just talk about the stuff that's really relevant to you. My stuff is all around the practice and team management and some leadership stuff. And with Charles, he is just absolutely brilliant with all of self-awareness and tapping into that greater resource of passion within yourself and having a deeper, more enjoyable experience of life itself. And so hopefully those additional benefits to the club membership is something that will excite you. And hopefully you'll take us up on that offer. And that's where you start seeing really big improvements in what's going on at your practice, within your team and within yourself as well. So once I direct you and I'll provide all of the links with emails coming through to you this month, you'll just be entering in and clicking get started, and it will take you through to the membership level that you want, and then that's where we get all your other details as well. For those practices that struggling financially, and I don't just mean Melbourne. If you are a practice that has chosen to function at level 3 or closed door temporarily or whatever, for this is just where it's an honest system, so it's up to you. I'm not going to judge it at all. But if you are in a position where you want the information and you cannot afford it or sustain the cost on a monthly basis as a practice for the club basic membership, then all you need to do is put into the discount code ASSIST, A-S-S-I-S-T, ASSIST. And that is your discount code. You can pop it in every month until you, I'm just gonna make sure, I just had a thought about that discount code, whether you have to enter it every month or whether it's going to default to a payment after month two. I'll look into that. That'll be part of my email being sent out to you. So you can actually put that code in and you can have membership for free until your practice can sustain the additional cost of the $49 a month. So hopefully I'm covering all bases there and making sure that I am doing right by everybody, including myself. Now, I'm going to go back to share screen, because if you are interested in that discount code, et cetera, then it is all within the Trello card. And for those who aren't on Trello and rely on the Club Hub page, it will be within the information there as well. And you'll see this here, assist for the club basic membership. That's the discount code, the word assist. Okay, next phase of today is developing your charm. Now, this was a topic that kind of I've thought about. I don't know really why I've been thinking about this for the past month. I've been conscious of the way people function online, you know, their online presence. I've always been intrigued about Charles and the way he carries himself through life. He's got this air of confidence and assuredness about himself, and he has an absolute charisma about him. And it really does affect the way people interact with him. And I think charm is different from just confidence. Confidence can come across as arrogant at times, and confidence is just that you're sure about yourself. But charm is a little bit different, I believe. It extends out to the way you make others feel as well. And it is a presence that you have about yourself that I think makes other people feel like they want to rise up to your level a little bit, or improve a little bit, or kind of walk a little bit with their head held a bit higher themselves. And so I thought there is such a benefit to developing charm, our own charm within our own lives, for various different reasons. One of the more obvious reasons is just the way we work with one another, that, you know, we want to be someone that people enjoy working with, that we leave people better off for having known us rather than worse off for our interactions. And so to become a charming person in the workplace, I think, is very conducive to effective teamwork, but also effective leadership as well. When we're looking at our interactions with patients, charm plays a big role. We have touched on in the past about the power of rapport building and rapport characteristics and behaviours that we have with patients to help them feel welcome into the practice, that we are a very friendly group of people, help them feel engaged in our conversations with them about their treatment, help them feel like they belong as a strong member of our practice. So rapport certainly plays its role in charm. Extrapolate charm out and have it be something, an entity all of its own that you work on, and certainly something that I've been working on, you know, for a while, a number of years in certain areas. As I was researching through, I thought, gosh, I have been conscious of some of these aspects and been trying to develop those separate parts of my characteristic up so they are a bit more charming than just kind of ad hoc and default mechanisms within my own character. So I've developed a little PowerPoint, so I'm going to move through that just so it's a nice distraction from just... So I'll share my screen. I'll bring up my PowerPoint here. Put it onto the full screen there. So how to be charming? How to be charming? So being charming is also highly relevant when we go to social gatherings or networking events. Sure, we haven't been to any of those for a long time, but there will be a time that we go back. So what better time to practice our skills as when we're all homebound? Maybe we, as family members, we can all practice charming characteristics together. So charm, what is it? And this is a combination of what I researched and kind of what I feel myself as well. So charm is the way you carry yourself and interact with others that make people love it when you walk into a room, enjoy conversations with you, admire you, and are attracted to you. And I don't mean like someone as much sexual attraction. I mean, or physical attraction. I mean, they're drawn to you. Maybe drawn to you would have been a better word. So they're attracted towards your presence. They're drawn to you like a magnet. And some of the characteristics are that people who you find charming, they are absolutely confident. They have an air of confidence about them. They are kind, and so they're thoughtful about the people around them. This is where confident just by itself isn't necessarily charming, because there are plenty of confident people out there who can be quite mean-spirited in company, in a group of people talking, berating one person so they can feel bolstered up. And so there's confidence, but there's also a kindness to their character. Friendliness, absolutely charming people are absolutely friendly. There's a high energy of charming people. They don't normally come in all, you know, low energy and woe is me and blah, blah, blah. They are upbeat, high energy people. This is another big one. They're polite. So you wouldn't find yourself describing somebody as charming if they were rude, if they were yelling, if they were had terrible table manners. Politeness is a key element to becoming a charming person. They are secure in themselves, absolutely secure in themselves. You think of a George Clooney, for example, walking into a room. He's got total confidence about himself. He absolutely has a kind spirit, seems very friendly, has a certain energy about him, seems to be walking through the room in a polite fashion, and is so secure in himself. Come on. The other thing that charming people are, and I get this from Charles, they are both interested in other people and they are interesting to other people as well. And so these are a couple of areas, especially the interesting area. That can be a lifelong journey to be interesting, because it all is all about developing our own passions and hobbies and topics of conversation that we love, that we tend to research and read all about. And so we can deliver interesting facts and stories about the things that intrigue us. So what do other people need? You know, we're trying to attract these people to us. We're trying to charm people and have them be drawn into our world. And so what do other people need in order to feel that? And you will absolutely appear charming if you give others the following things. People all have a feeling that everyone needs to feel loved, to feel included and wanted, to feel validated, and to feel understood. So to feel loved, you can absolutely look at somebody with loving eyes. With your family and friendships, that's easy to help them feel loved, because you are careful with their emotions, you are thoughtful with them, and you make sure that they feel great about themselves by telling them wonderful things about themselves and reassuring them of how you feel about them. We can still do that with strangers. We can look at them and have, it's all about mindset. What we think comes out through our mannerisms, our facial features, the way we speak and communicate. And so if we've got a loving energy towards the people around us, it doesn't mean we're in love with them or that we actually love them like a friend or a family member, but we can love a fellow human being because they are a fellow human being. And this is something that some people do walk through life with and others absolutely don't. They look at other human beings as being frustrating, or they look at other human beings as being in the way or not driving quickly enough, or you're stopping in the middle of the shopping queue. Come on, let's keep this line moving. And so they can see other people as an annoyance or as people that don't agree with their opinions about certain things, and so they must be stupid. But if we can shift our mindset around the way we perceive humanity as a whole, that everyone has the right to their own opinion, the right to direct their own actions, the right to feel loved, appreciated because of the sheer gift of life that other person presents, then that's going to come through in the way we behave with people generally. So everyone needs to feel loved. So you can come from a space of love when you're in communication with people. And as I'm going through these things, I found myself, and you might want to as well, I found myself constantly in either a teamwork environment with other team members, a networking event where a lot of people are there just by themselves until they group up with others, group up with other strangers, or in a party environment, a social gathering environment where there's groups of people that know each other, but don't necessarily all know each other individually. So to be able to walk into those spaces and feel a strong feeling of kin with people, despite the fact that you don't know them, is a lovely way of starting to break down the kind of the core beliefs and barriers that we have when we come across strangers. Certainly within a team environment, love can be a natural, because quite often you come across team members that you really enjoy working with, and together you really do have play a powerful role in the success of the business and the things that you can achieve as a team. And so you have feelings, loving feelings, really strong feelings for the people that you work with. So that's easy. And also from a party situation as well, you could even think, well, gosh, this is a collection of people that this one person, this friend that I love, knows, and she's gathered all these people because, and she's the common, and we love her, so why wouldn't I love the people that she loves? Why wouldn't I extend them love first and then judge them later? I'll just extend everyone that loving feeling and help that direct the way I communicate with them for this evening, for example. Everyone wants to feel included and wanted. That is for sure. It is one of our core basic needs to feel included and wanted, because we run in packs. We aren't designed to move through this life separately, as separate entities from one another. We love being in a pack. We are born into a pack, our own family. Then we move into packs in working groups that we work within. At schools, we form a friendship group and a instrumentals group. If you play in a band, sometimes you do volunteer work, sometimes you go swimming for a hobby, and you do things in groups, and then you go and find your own group and you create your own group in terms of a family. And so feeling like we're included, you don't realize how important that is until you're on the outer. And I think we've all been in situations where we've had a team member who's been alienated, or you yourself have been alienated from the team. It's a very lonely, disconcerting space to be in. And you end up behaving in such a way where you're trying to break back into that group again. So one of our core anxieties or insecurities as an individual is that we are ejected from a group. And so one of the things that you can do to appear more charming is to help that person through the way you're interacting with them and as the group itself, and including them in the conversations within a particular group, or finding a solution for a particular issue at work or what have you, that you're including them. You're saying you're part of this group, your opinions, your stories matter, and I'm really interested in them. So come on in, you're here, you're safe with us, or you're safe with me. So the feeling of inclusion and wantedness is an important thing to remember when we're thinking about how can I be charming with these strangers around me, or even with the people that I know around me in terms of your working group. We also want to feel validated. And so it never feels nice to offer an idea or an opinion forward and have it just shut down. Never feels nice. And it makes us feel unsafe as human beings. On the flip side, your charming character comes to the fore, and whatever idea or opinion someone comes forward with, you don't have to agree with it. You may think it's the most craziest idea on the face of the earth. It doesn't matter. What they're saying, you can validate. I hear you. That's an interesting idea. Gosh, I wonder, what made you think of that? What made you think of that? Now, what made you think of that? That's an interesting idea. And so helping people feel validated, their ideas validated, their input to a social conversation validate that as well. It's a powerful way of becoming a charming personality. Also, people need to feel understood. Understood is different from validated. So validated is, that's a great idea. Validated is, that's an interesting idea. Feeling understood is, tell me how you came to that thought. And then that person explains and you say, I understand how you got there then. At first, I thought it was a crazy idea at first, but now I understand. And so helping people feel understood, you never have to agree with somebody if you don't agree with them. Don't ever feel that way. But you can certainly help people around you feel understood. These four areas are important no matter what group you're in, whether it be that networking group, the social group at a party, or the working group. And certainly your family group. Gosh, make sure your children feel all of these things as well. They certainly feel loved, I'm sure, and included and wanted in that family unit, no question about it. But do they feel validated, and do they feel understood? practice on your family. Making sure I've got no questions coming up. The next element of charm is to start to address your physical appearance. And physical appearance does play a role, and all you need to do is think of the George Clooney's, the Princess Diana's in life, and then you start to think, gosh, people who are really charming do pay a lot of attention to their physical appearance. And I've got a couple of images here that just highlight that. And so this lady here has got, I know it's probably all politically incorrect, but that's okay. I'm willing to cop that. So exactly the same dress and relatively the same stance as well that she's got. In the first picture, she looks perfectly lovely. In the second picture, she looks perfectly lovely as well. However, in comparison, which one do you feel is putting across a more charming, confident space about her? And of course, the first one, she's got her hair done, nice and neat and tidy. Makeup's there, a bit of nail polish on. The second one, the hair is nice, shaggy, chic and a bit disheveled, but no makeup and no nail polish. Zero wrong with either picture, but a well-groomed appearance certainly lends itself more so to a charming character. And the second one with this gentleman here, so he's got his beard and glasses and hair, and in the first instance you go, yeah, sure, you know, looks perfectly fine. But after a grooming session at the barber, he is looking top notch. And so do dress the part. And I did a blog a few weeks ago, and it was inspired by Jordan Peterson. And Jordan Peterson is that political commentator. He's been ill for quite a bit of time, I think over a year by now, and hopefully he's getting back to health now. But he is quite a controversial political commentator. And when he started getting out on the speaking stage, he bought himself and spent a lot of money on tailored suits. He wanted to dress the part, and an element of it is fake it till you make it. Dress a level higher than how you actually feel about yourself, and you'll feel yourself rise up. How often when you buy a new outfit, you do walk taller when you move around when you're wearing that brand new outfit, as it becomes a little tattered, so does your stance. But dress the part. If you don't have properly fitted clothes, go out and buy yourself a new wardrobe if you've got the funds to do so. And make sure your clothes are clean and well pressed. So dress the part. And as I say, dress the part, dress at slightly higher level to what you need to do. So at work, quite often in a dental surgery, we absolutely can get away with wearing t-shirts rather than shirts and very comfortable shoes rather than more work attire shoes because of the environment that we're in. But just try, as a bit of an experiment, dress slightly to a higher level than what you normally do for all of your scenarios that you walk into, whether it be a social event or a Zoom call. The amount of meetings I have on Zoom is enormous. And there's one group that I meet with, or used to meet with, twice a month in person. And it's a professional group, so we always, you know, wore suits and et cetera in professional attire going to these meetings. Now that we've flipped to Zoom, half of them are turning up in tracksuits and t-shirts. Again, nothing wrong with that, but why not maintain the standard as high? Why not still dress up, get a suit jacket on, sit up straight, have a strong, confident, charming presence online as well. So dress the part, absolutely. And make sure you are well-groomed. Charming people are well-groomed. They get their hair cut regularly. They have it styled if they've got long hair. They have it styled. Their nails are nicely manicured and not bitten down. Any facial hair like this gentleman here, it doesn't just grow randomly with the neck hair as well. It's trimmed and groomed nicely. And for women or men who have the inclination to, nicely done makeup. And when I say nails, I mean nicely, professionally manicured nails. So if you've got fake nails come, you know, on and all the rest of it, if it's a professional environment, professional nails. If it's a party environment, go party. Makeup is exactly the same. So have nice, professional type of makeup if you're going into a professional setting. If you're going into a social setting, dress your face up a little bit more, go that little bit, that next level higher. Double checking my time. Going super well with time. The next element of exuding charm is your physical presence. And I've got a picture here, and this is something that I've got to say, my physical presence is something that I have been concentrating on for the last few years, to be honest with you. I think I'm in the habit of doing it now. And I continually find little elements that I think, gosh, I could improve upon that. So this is a classic. So how do you sit when you're at a social function or in a work meeting or what have you? And that there are little things that you can do that play a role in it. One of my clients, she is very particular, certainly particular about her attire and her appearance. And this picture really reminded me of her, the way her legs are crossed here. This lovely dentist that I work with is to this degree as well. She won't sit all the way back in one of those large chairs. She'll sit further to the fore and she'll have her feet crossed that way and she'll have her notes on her pad, on her lap in front of her. And just, I'm imagining her now, and it does put across to people, certainly to me, that she has a standard. And just because she can slump back in the chair doesn't mean she will, because she has a particular standard of how she wants to appear when she is in public. Certainly when she's by herself, I'm sure she does slump back and put her feet on the chair. So, and this one too, that first image. So first of all, nothing wrong with crossing your legs, but then if you move forward and cross your hands over as well, you are closing off your body language. Maybe you won't look as nice in your clothing when you are more hunched over. So let's see what we can do about addressing elements of our physical presence. And so even to an observer walking into the room, their eyes might be drawn to you because of the fact you are holding yourself with such poise. Every time I say the word poise, I'm reminded of the Seinfeld episode where Kramer is helping a contestant in a beauty pageant, and he keeps saying, poise counts. It does count. So wherever you are, even when you're not in public, I encourage this, because this is habitual stuff you do with your body, this first one that you do with your body, that can actually even have a detrimental effect on your muscles and tendons and everything. But if you can get into the habit of doing this all the time, then your resting posture will be one of poise and health for you as well. So always head up, shoulders back, a nice steady posture. Even when you're standing, and I'm just going to, I was trying to find good pictures online for this sort of thing, and I knew I'd have to end up showing you myself. So when you're standing in a group of people at a networking event or in a work meeting, like maybe it's the morning huddle at a party. So if you are in standing with your feet, you know, hip width apart, and you have your hands open, nice open body language, you have your head held high and your shoulders back, that is a nice strong stance. Many times I would find myself, I was a big leaner on walls, on the front desk, on the whatever, on the chair, I just lean. And I'd stand comfortably rather than with any particular purpose. And as a result, you tend to close off your body language and leaning and slouching, you don't look all that professional, and you certainly don't put out this self-assuredness, this secure body embodiment that you want to put across to people. And so whenever you are just standing around, whenever you are in conversation with somebody, standing in a group, be mindful, what is my body doing? Am I putting my best physical step forward in each of the areas of my mannerisms and how I'm holding myself? So head up, shoulders back, and a nice steady posture. Eye contact is important. Eye contact means that you are interested and engaged with people, and that you are also connecting with them, helping them engage with what you're talking about. So eye contact is a really important thing. Eye contact as well is a sign of confidence. You think of a little child who might be 5 or 6 and you're having a conversation and they're a bit shy and they're looking all over the place. And then as they grow older, they start to hold your gaze and you know that they're feeling more confident in themselves having adult conversations. And so eye contact is an important element. Open body is really important. Now, when we were going through rapport building, I was talking about mirroring, and that's where closing off your body language is appropriate if you are trying to get in rapport with another human being and they just happen to be the type that folds their arms. And that's where you can then fold your arms and continue talking with them. But when we're talking about charm, we're talking about somebody who is open to everybody and here I am. Look at me. I'm here so I can make all your lives so much more beautiful just because you know me, because you've experienced me. So you want a more open body language. You don't want to be closed off. You want to be open because your charm is also about them. It's about how you're making them feel in the way they feel in response to the way you're holding yourself and the way you're presenting yourself. The open body language has certainly been one that I have been conscious of. I think I've done okay with eye contact, but open body language is one that I found if I'm sitting across from somebody at a table, for example, I will start doing something like this, or I could sit back and do this, and they're comfortable positions. But I tell you what, I've been in such the habit of touching my face in some way, you know, in some way, breaking that habit has been enormously difficult. I feel like I've been trying to break that habit for ages. So when you are sitting at a table, think to yourself, how can I sit here with this person with open body language without trying to cover up or fiddle with myself or something like that? It can be a real challenge. And so becoming mindful about it is an interesting experiment. So open body language. Now, hint of a smile, resting face. I don't know if any of you have heard about bitchy resting faces and things like that. So some people just, when they're just in contemplation or not thinking about anything, their default space that their face goes to is like nasty. They're expecting the worst. They're thinking the worst. You know, this bitchy resting face, it's hilarious. And so because I've seen photos of myself with a resting face, which I do not like because it makes all the wrinkles appear and it makes me look cross and pissed off, I have become very conscious over the years of what my resting face is when I'm at a function. And I distinctly remember being at this particular function and I was like, okay, I'm going to think happy thoughts and think what a wonderful thing the world is. So I have a hint of a smile in my resting face. And I'm at a networking event. I'm standing here all by myself. No one knows what I'm thinking, but hopefully I'm exuding confidence, charm, and a face where someone would like to walk up and speak with me. And indeed, someone did come up and speak with me, and she's since become a really great friend. And she often relays a story. You know, they say, "Oh, how did you both meet?" And then she often relays a story. I was at this networking event. I was all by myself. I just wanted someone to speak to. I was looking desperately for someone who looked a little bit friendly, and I saw Julie's face, and it looked so friendly. So I was drawn to her, and I'm like, "Oh, that's awesome! That's charm working all over." And so when you are in one of those environments where you're by yourself, just remember, no one knows what's going on up in your brain. And so you can stand in a space by yourself and look perfectly charming and perfectly welcoming, and you won't be alone for long, hopefully. resting your hands. And so this was another one, you know, that I was telling you about before, like where my hands go. I sometimes wring my hands and I, you know, play with a nail or whatever, you know, play with my rings. And it's a challenge just to sit there and not fiddle with yourself sometimes. And so do think about, where are my hands resting? Are my hands in such a way that they are purposefully placed, or are they doing something that is taking away from my charming, most magnificent persona that I'm trying to put across? Have you got a strong stance when you are standing and when you are seated? How can I sit in this chair? Sometimes some chairs are quite difficult, but how can I sit in this chair with poise, hold myself well, back straight, head back, shoulders back? The other thing as well is to avoid slouching. As I said, you know, I think a lot of people are slouches, and it's not until you see that person or do it yourself. You know, I'll be sitting in front of my computer. I'm much better now, to be honest with you. I do tend to sit up nice and straight on the forward part of the chair when I'm sitting in front of a computer. But in the past, I absolutely have gone, oh, I shouldn't really sit up straight. And then I go all the way up. I think, gosh, just sit up straight. And there was so far to move for me to sit up straight. I must have been nearly falling asleep on the table. So try to avoid slouching, not just when you're standing, but when you're seated in front of your computer or anywhere. Do get in the habit of strengthening your muscles so you've got a nice, strong posture. Also, look boldly around the room. Quite often, if we're going to be the first person into a room, we don't know anybody else, or even if you're going into a party with a group of people, you're walking into the working environment, we can tend to be distracted or our eyes cast down, or if we're a bit shy, a bit introspective, or sorry, a bit, oh, what's the word? Not extrovert, introvert. if you're a bit of an introvert, you can walk into a room thinking, nobody noticed me, please just let me go over there and stand in the corner near the champagne glasses and I'll be fine. But when you want to put across charm, that's not how you act. When you want to put across charm, you go boldly into that room and you've got your eyes up and you're scanning the room. You're looking at this wonderful array of people. Who am I going to find interesting to talk to tonight? What an exciting time. I hope I get to speak to everybody. So do look boldly around the room. That shows other people how confident you are in yourself and is a charming element. And be aware of your mannerisms. Sometimes a mannerism could be, you know, picking a tooth or scratching the head constantly, playing with an earring, you know, where's my necklace sitting or whatever. But anything that's distracting away from a nice confident appearance, be mindful about it and train yourself to catch it and stop it. The minute you find it, stop it. And I have absolutely been in meetings with other people over a coffee table at a cafe before, and they must think I've got Tourette's or something like that because I'm constantly trying to adjust my pants. And so they can just rest comfortably on the table. They don't have to be doing anything. So I don't know where I get this fidgety element from, because I'm not particularly nervous at these times. I think it's just been a habit from when I was younger, quite possibly. But we will all have these kind of physical habits and these ways of presenting ourselves that do come from when we're younger. And they are there. We then go through a space of we're trying to avoid certain things. And so then we hold ourselves in a different way. We try to move towards other things. Therefore, we hold ourselves in a different way. And we have become the people that we are, which are glorious and wonderful. But as you know, I love a constant and never-ending improvement journey. And I think we're all on that. And embracing that journey is such a fun thing to do. And we get progress as a human being when we are on that kind of journey. So why not be the most charming self that we can possibly be? Mindset. So much of it's mindset. As you know, if you are looking at somebody who appears not very confident, it is likely they're having not very confident thoughts about themselves. If you see someone come boldly into a room saying, I'm here, they're probably thinking quite powerful thoughts about themselves. It does come back to mindset. What we think comes out in our behaviours and our actions and the way we hold ourselves. So mindset is key, and a really confident mindset is a wonderful thing. So you get that by the beliefs that you have about life in general. Confidence, sustained confidence, means that you have generally positive thoughts about everything and powerful thoughts about everything. So be that self-awareness journey. Be secure in yourself, your abilities, and your potential. Feel confident in what you've experienced in life so far. That it's been a strong, good journey that have taught you things. That, you know, Anthony Robbins says, life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. And if you are finding yourself going through life, reflecting back over situations saying, oh, if it wasn't for that happening, I would have been better. Or because of that, I'm struggling now. No, life and the experiences that you've had within it have made you the person that you are today. It's all happened so you could be the person you are today. So use everything and move boldly forward. Nothing happens to you. It happens for you. No, also that everything is in perfect order as of this moment in time right now. And COVID situation is a lovely example of that. And it's certainly been my belief around COVID that I don't have a belief that if I caught COVID that I would die a horrible death. That's not where my thoughts go. I don't have the thoughts that all my family are so vulnerable to catching it either. I might be wrong. I might be right. Who knows? We're not going to know until time rolls out. But what I do know is that everything is in perfect order as of this moment in time. And it helps you think that it helps you stop resisting what is right now if it's troubling. So everything's in perfect order. I'm playing my role in this, getting the best out of everything and experiencing the natural benefits and drawbacks of life. But at least I'm living my life. I'm not living it in fear or anxiety. I just know everything's going to be just good. Sweet as. Everyone has a right to direct their own behaviours and thoughts. Again, sometimes we like to impose our thoughts or the way people should be on others. If only everyone else acted the way I wanted them to act, life would be fine. No, rejoice in the fact that you have complete direction over your thoughts, actions, opinions, beliefs, and everyone else is afforded the same wonderful benefit. And how wonderful is life that this is the world we live in. Life is an opportunity for fun, passion, enjoyment, love, and I want to be grateful for everything that I have. And coming, you know, doing that, the background work on all of this sort of stuff really does help you build a confident mindset. And if you don't feel that way, going all over the place. If you don't feel that way naturally, fake it till you make it. This has been such a useful thing for me. I tell you, you know, I think I've told you in the past that Toastmasters, I've been doing Toastmasters for about 11 years now. And every time I stand up to do a speech, I naturally go into my routine, my mental routine. And my mental routine is telling myself how awesome I am as a speaker because there are no other thoughts that are going to be helpful in that space. So faking it till you make it really does work. So when you walk into a room, when you walk into a group of people, when you are part of a group or you're there by yourself, think really powerful thoughts in your head. Think, I am magnificent. I ooze charm. I'm going to walk in that room and say, I'm here. And what you think will come out of you in subtle ways and it will draw people towards you because you've come across ridiculously confident and charming. So with the mindset stuff, I'm just making sure I've got a bit more time. Yes, I do have time to explain this bit. So mindset stuff is interesting in terms of the amount of unhelpful beliefs that we do have running around in our brain. And we know this every time we do something wrong. Our negative Nancy brain does come in there and reminds us of all the things we've done wrong in the past and why it's ridiculous that we did that wrong thing and we should feel ashamed of ourselves and bad and all the rest of it. And those negative thoughts can be quite strong. As an experiment, after listening to a few things on audio from Dr. Bruce Lipton around epigenetics on my daily exercise, I did a little bit of an experiment on myself. Because normally when I go out for daily exercise, half the time I'll be listening to something, a podcast or something, and the other half of the time I'll just use it for contemplation because contemplation time is ridiculously important to me. And it's where you kind of formulate your thoughts and articulate your ideas well enough that you can then express them at the next networking event or party. And I started this process of telling myself that I was a super performer. And I repeated it to myself over and over and over and over and over and over again on repeat on this. And then this particular one was a walk and I went for a walk for an hour. And so I was repeating this thing to myself over and over and over and again. I wasn't distracting myself with anything else. I just kept repeating it. And then I found myself moving through all these little thoughts and not even issues, but thoughts and situations. I was thinking through these things on a conscious level. And I was thinking, oh, I could do this and I could do that. And gosh, I feel good about that. Yeah. And I've got this unique thought around that thing. That could be a blog that I write soon. And my mind was going nuts. But what I recognized was I was still repeating, I'm a super performer. I'm a super performer. I'm a super performer. So what I feel like had happened is that if there were any negative thoughts, like, oh, I won't write a blog on that, who do you think you are to write a blog on that? Not that I was thinking that, but if you had any negative thoughts going on, it feels like I replaced them with my repetition of I'm a super performer, I'm a super performer, I'm a super performer, to the degree that that became the subliminal thought that I could then have conscious thought over the top of. And I've got to say, doing that for a number of days and weeks on with different elements, I had different kind of affirmation thoughts, if you like, going through my mind. For me, it has worked a treat. So I don't know if that's something that you would find interesting and worthy of experimentation. But if you do find yourself beset with negative thought patterns, choose the one positive one that you want to focus on. Repeat, 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 repeat. And let's just see if you can actually smother out the negative ones, start functioning with that other one. And that's a fake it till you make it. Because when you start saying, I'm a super performer, you're saying it because you don't believe you are a super performer. But when I start saying it now, it feels unnecessary because I feel like I'm a super performer. I may not be. As long as I believe it, though, that's my experience of life. I reckon that's okay. Okay, speech. The way you talk is impactful on how charming you appear to be. And this is another thing that I think can be worked on as a self-improvement technique all the way through every day. I have found myself to be a more effective communicator. And when I do see other people that do communicate in my eyes in a way that I find charming and effective, they've got a lovely, slow pace. They expect people to wait for the information, to wait for the story, to wait for the witty idea. They expect people to do that. So they don't feel they have to race through so quickly to get all their words in time before they get interrupted. Someone who's got this charming, confident presence has that knock-on effect of having people wait for them to finish what they've got to say before they interject with their own thing. And so absolutely slow your pace down. If people interrupt you, let them interrupt you. Take it gracefully. Pick up your story if it's still relevant after they've finished speaking. So slow your pace right down. Use a deep voice rather than speaking loudly. This is when you are speaking to a broad group of people, or you're speaking when there's already background noise going on. Somebody who was hard of hearing years and years ago told me this. He said, don't yell at me because I'm hard of hearing. Bring down your decibel, like bring down the depth of your voice. So speak strong and low, not up and high. That's where they've lost their hearing. And so even in a group where there's a din going on, what can be heard more so is not up and high, but low and strong. So use a deep voice when you're speaking loudly. And I remember my sister, when her little girl was growing up, she started this little kind of girly, you know, la la la, to talk and said, Mommy, can I have this, please? Oh, can I really have this? And I would watch Jen say to her daughter, speak strongly if you would like me to do something for you. And so that would kind of encourage her out of this kind of la la la, but speak strongly, think confidently, I would like this. And I thought, gosh, that's a really interesting, I found it an admirable thing to do, to start to teach this to people, to young children from an early age, that if you would like something, speak affirmatively for it. Also, pause and select your words. So pausing allows you to select your words. Again, my experiences with Toastmasters has taught me so much. And one of the key lessons has been that you need to remember every word of your speech. This has been my experience. If you plan on speaking quickly throughout the speech, you only have to get the framework of the speech if you plan on taking pauses throughout the speech. It is only in a pause that your brain can kick back into action again and remember what your points were going to be during that speech, or remember that story that you're telling the people at the party, or be able to more effectively articulate your message when you're at the networking event, describing to a group of people or one other person what you do. So pauses are a wonderful way of communicating more effectively in a more charming way, where people are hanging on your every word and have really, you know, and I've got this here at the end there, practice telling a story. If you can, I should go back one step. When I first met Charles, I was so amazed with how he, and so impressed with how he relates stories. And then as I got to know him longer, I'm like, oh, he repeats the stories. He doesn't, it's not just one story you have in one conversation once. If they're great stories, improve upon them every time you tell them, repeat them. Find out, where do I put a great pause in so people are hanging on for that next humdinger of a line, for the butt of the joke, or, you know, for the punchline of the joke, that they're pausing, that you've paused and they're hanging out to hear that. So pauses can be a very effective way of becoming a very charming storyteller. Also speak with clarity. Speak with clarity. A lot of people do get into the habit of mumbling or using filler words. And, or if you've got an accent, many, there are, for example, the Indian culture, and there's another one, I think Chinese as well. There are many cultures. Australians do it as well. They have a natural way of speaking very quickly, but if there's an accent involved as well, it makes it even more difficult to catch on to all of the words. And then if you're at a party situation, there's music in the background and they're talking over there, it's even more difficult. So do speak with clarity when you are communicating with another person. If you want to be charming, you need to be understood. Modulate your voice. And so when you're telling stories, or when you're talking about an experience you had earlier in the day, or you're making a political point in an argument, or not an argument, but a debate with a group of people, modulate your voice. If you're excited, use an excited voice. And if it's really difficult stuff you're talking about, you know, bring it down and modulate your voice. Become an entertaining speaker. And as I say, practice storytelling. And when you've got a good story, whether it be something that you saw in a documentary, an actual experience that you had, or a really funny story, a joke, repeat them over and over again. And now you've just become your repertoire. And then the minute it's called upon in a group, you start telling this story and you're like, just, you're hitting it, because you have said it so many times, you really trained yourself to say it in a very entertaining and engaging way. Another element of being charming is being a great listener. And so when someone is talking with you, maintain eye contact with them. Show signs of engagement. Without interrupting them. Sometimes people think, I want them to know that I'm understanding where they're coming from, so I'll let them know what my story is, so then we know, they know that we're on the same page. No. Be an effective listener. So the showing signs of engagement without interrupting them is important. Every now and again, you can say, oh, I know what you mean. Trying to build that commonality rapport. I know what you mean. I understand what you're saying. Show signs of contemplation. And so if they're talking about a difference of opinion to you, a political opinion, for example, if they're talking about their experiences after their father passed away, if they're talking about their thoughts around and ideas around how we should get a better system going for an element of your work in your within your workplace, show signs that you're contemplating it. And always, again, you don't have to agree with what they've said, but people like to feel validated and understood. Say, that's interesting. Thanks. Like if they've shared a tender story, that's interesting. Thanks for sharing that. Refer back to what the other said. So when you're in a group and another person walks in, and this happens quite often, you'll be at a party, or a networking event, there'll be a group of people and one person will kind of be wandering around. Maybe the partner's gone off to the bathroom and they're like just wandering around. Break open the group. Say, hi, how are you? Come on in. This person was just relaying this story. Continue on. Bring people into your groups. Make them feel wanted and that they have a sense of belonging. Get to know somebody new. It's a wonderful thing. And when you are in a working environment, for example, and a way of validating another human being is someone's raised a particular issue, you say, oh, that reminds me, because Sally said this very thing the other day and it really resonated with me. So I hope you don't mind me sharing it, Sally, but she said that this great piece of wisdom helps Sally feel complete. And that's a very charming thing to do. I like talking around Julie because she reminds me how awesome I am and tells other people how awesome I am. That's a pretty good thing. 6:04, I'm about to wrap up. Certainly avoid interrupting and avoid dominating any conversation. Don't be bombastic. Don't take over. Charm is not arrogance. Being charming is not just confidence. Being charming is allowing everyone their space, affording everybody the floor when it's their turn to speak. And certainly these are some core elements that come with that charming personality. As I said before, they're always polite. They've got proper table manners. They don't point out other people's faults and fables. They are polite when it comes to breaking up in a group and saying to a stranger, come on in. If you're just wandering around by yourself, would you like to join this group and have a chat? So they're very polite. They laugh at their joke. They laugh at jokes. And so even if you find somebody else's joke not funny, laugh anyway. Just be polite and laugh anyway. And one of the things that a charismatic, charming person doesn't do is when someone's trying to say a joke, say, oh, yeah, I've heard this one. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you've heard the joke 10 times. It doesn't even matter if it's funny, but it's funny to watch someone tell a joke, good or bad, then laugh along as a group. That's a fun thing to do. Why ruin it for that person? So don't interrupt someone, say, oh, yeah, you've told me this story before, or, oh, yeah, I've heard that joke, that's funny. What about everybody else? Why not just allow this person the floor so they can perform and get a nice response from the group? Find what they say interesting, even if it's not. Remember, charming people are both interested and interesting. Don't argue with people, especially in a social gathering or a network gathering, you know, unless it's actually a debate that you're part of. Don't argue with them. Say to them, because everyone has the right to their own opinion and they've all come from their own spaces and experiences and discernment to get to that opinion, say, you have an interesting point. I'd be interested to hear your views about, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about my view. So make sure it is still a polite conversation. And you're also not saying to them that you're stupid and you're not just leaving their opinion hang there without you validating it. You have an interesting point. If others interrupt, if you're in a group and this person's speaking and this one interrupts them, this one stops speaking, let this person finish their thought and say, that's great. And Sally, what were you saying before about, and give them the doorway to come back in and have their thoughts validated and have themselves be understood. Remain engaged despite hearing or hearting of the joke or story before. I have already explained that one. And keep in mind that, as I mentioned to team members, whenever I work within their teams in a dental practice, the first 4 seconds is how long it takes a human being to figure out whether they like you or not. It's a very short time, 4 seconds. But what you can do in those 4 seconds is immediately make eye contact, smile, have open body language and say something positive. Hi there, my name's Julie. What's yours? Introduce yourself. When you're coming across into the team environment, first 4 seconds, you want to come in there and set the tone in a nice high energy. Look people in the eye. Good morning. You can do that in 4 seconds, that's for sure. So that's my little presentation. I hope that was good. And I'm going to quickly go over, since I'm running over a wee bit, and just now have a look at the daily focus. So the daily focus today and for the coming week, so you'll get it first thing tomorrow morning and it's going to be with us for the coming week, is be aware of your body. The confidence and charm you portray have a lot to do with the way you hold yourself. So for the coming week, think powerful thoughts when entering a room and practice confident body posture and mannerisms as well. I'm going to be attaching that PowerPoint to this. I'll just make those couple of spelling error adjustments, and then I'll attach the PowerPoint to this card and to the Club Hub card as well. And drag it over to completed so you can always reflect back on those key elements around your physicality. We have ticked that off. We're no longer on that top priority because we've completed it. And I look forward to seeing everybody next Wednesday. That last thought I did have when we were talking about level three operations here in Melbourne is that it's just so important to decide whether, okay, is it viable for us to see emergency patients only? If so, do everything you can to see as many emergency patients as possible while still following the guidelines around COVID-19 and infection control, because you don't want to just scrape by. We just don't know how long it's going to go on for. Fingers crossed, we'll be going to level two soon though. The other part of what I think is a really important thing to do during level three is to jump onto those virtual consultations. Do your best to nurture your patients while they can't receive treatment, making sure they're doing everything they can at home to maintain their level of comfort at the moment. Talk them through if it's getting to emergency stage, make an appointment time if it is an emergency. And certainly people who are in the middle of a treatment plan that have not even accepted it yet, or not in the middle of a treatment plan, but who haven't even started a treatment plan yet, use this time to get online with them, a virtual consultation. Share the screen, show them their x-rays, show them a diagram of what you mean, make sure they're on board. So when you can come back and treat your patients again, that they are now engaged with a treatment plan that's going to suit them, that they've chosen, and they can book in from October onwards. I hope everybody's going well. Please do let me know if there's any topics that you would like me to cover at future live sessions, but I do bid you farewell, and I hope you have a beautiful, wonderful afternoon and evening. Thanks.